one regard or another. It is hour number two is underway. It's 4 minutes after the hour. The Dino Costa Show continues across North America, around the world on this Wednesday, April the 1st, 2020, broadcast month number 5 of this year's show on thedinoshow.com. Thanks for being with us. You want to email the show, you can. It is dinotalkusa@gmail.com, dinotalkusa@gmail.com. He joins me every week on Wednesday night from his home out in California. We love him because he speaks his mind and is not afraid to say things, and really the most talented columnist. One thing I didn't tell you, Jay, and welcome onto the show, Mr. Mariotti, but one thing I did not tell you is that I thought that your last position when you had a regular feature at, I think it was the San Francisco Examiner, I think it was, that it was some of your best. I mean, you were pounding out some 5-6 columns sometimes a week, illuminating writing that was just terrific. And I consider Jay to be the preeminent sports columnist still in America today. And he's on the show with me right now on this Wednesday. How are you, Mr. Mariotti?
That is very kind of you, Dino. I appreciate that. I'm just worried about Joe Exotic right now. You're aware of Joe, right?
I am, yeah.
Joe Exotic, I'm just reading this right now, is being isolated while in jail over coronavirus concerns. So we have gone full circle now. We have used this Tiger King show as escapism, and now even Joe Exotic isn't immune from the coronavirus. So I thought you would appreciate that.
Well, I thought you would appreciate something that I mentioned in the first hour of the show here tonight. In fact, I invoked your name and said it's going to be interesting to see what Jay says about this. Something that very unusual happened. And we talk about the mainstream press, mainstream media, sports media, so on and so forth, and how they're reluctant to bite the hands that feed them, and which, of course, neuters many people and prevents them from speaking their minds on so many things. But did you see today, Jay, that Adam Schefter, who I think you know, and has been with ESPN since 2008, really bit the hand that fed him today, the NFL. And concerning the draft, here is what Schefter had to say to our good buddy Scott Van Pelt on SportsCenter. He said, quote, the draft is happening, the NFL draft is happening, only through the sheer force and determination and lack of foresight from the National Football League. And he went on to say they are determined to put this on while there is carnage in the streets. How do you think Roger Goodell took that?
Well, I applaud Adam Schefter for a number of reasons. One, ESPN is right now trying to protect its relationship with the NFL. And people might think, well, hell, the NFL is not going to play a season. These bastards are so arrogant, Roger Goodell and the owners. They keep putting out announcements. We intend to have a season, and we expect fans to be there. Never mind that we might make it unsafe for the players. We're going to have a season. We're going to play in Europe. We're going to play in Mexico. The audacity, Dino, of these people just blows me away right now. And in the middle of it, for the second time, this is the second time Adam Schefter has ripped the NFL apart, used the word carnage. And I applaud him because he's, as you say, he's biting the hand that feeds him, and he might be drying up some streams for information. That's how he makes his living.
Right.
He has sources everywhere, including in the league office. And by teeing off twice on Goodell and the owners, Adam is pissing people off, and you've been in this business long enough to know. If you piss off a source, they will cut off connections to you. So this is where a Jay Glazer or a Chris Mortensen or a Peter King, these are all kind of softies who won't, really, very, very rarely do they make waves. Adam, twice now in the middle of a crisis, has chosen to take a great moral stand against the National Football League, and I wonder how that'll affect his career, and I applaud him for having the balls to do that.
And ditto to everything you say. I made comments similar to that in the first hour, Jay, and I also talked on the show last night about the National Football League, and PASH, their general counsel, had a conference call with reporters across the country and said that no, whether the draft is going to take place, when it's going to take place, and planning for a full season, and they voted for an extra playoff team in each conference, and I think, again, the optics of that, especially in lieu of what's going on with everything else around the country, look particularly bad. And I think that the NFL should be taking a much more wait-and-see approach, a cautious approach, and their message should be something that goes along the lines of saying, listen, we hope to have a season. We want to have a season. We don't know if we're going to have a season because we're dealing with factors that are well beyond our control. So while we remain hopeful, you know, we just don't know what is going to happen in the next couple of weeks and months ahead. But they're bound and determined to just plow through and say, hey, baby, we're not only going to have a season, not only that, Jay, but they're going to have the international games as well, four in London and one in Mexico City. Now it's full speed ahead for the NFL.
Well, there's so much hubris here and so much greed and arrogance. You're right. Why not just use the word indefinite? Even Trump has come around. Last Friday, Trump was still comparing the coronavirus to the flu. Finally, apparently a friend of his is in a coma because of the virus. Between that and noticing that his in his boyhood neighborhood, the hospital in Queens actually has freezers outside that are storing bodies, between those two situations, Trump finally came around and addressed this appropriately yesterday. Thank you, President Trump, for finally sounding presidential. Now, why doesn't the NFL follow, excuse me, in his footsteps and take the same approach? Why not simply say, with respect to the situation and the people who are dying and their families, we're just going to hold back. Football isn't important right now. They've taken the opposite approach, a dreadful, greedy, tone-deaf approach. And when Adam Schefter, of all people, has to call them out twice, maybe Goodell should be sitting there and wondering right now, what am I doing here? Dino, 1 week of free agency, that league spent $2 billion. You saw the Tom Brady story. Tom is going on Howard Stern next week. I think Tom should maybe lay low here. I don't need to hear Tom Brady on Howard Stern. Goodell is looking out of touch by continuing to ram this NFL draft down our throats, even though it's going to be a virtual draft. They're going to do this, what, by Skype? What if Joe Burrow's Skype account, you know, goes off? We're not going to see Joe Burrow getting, you know, the call from the Cincinnati Bengals or the Miami Dolphins. This whole thing is a shit show, and they're still going to do it. And then furthermore, last week you saw this. Goodell puts out a statement warning executives in his league to not criticize him.
Yeah.
And that there will be grounds for disciplinary action if they do. So He's obviously doing this to appease the TV networks, ABC, ESPN, Fox, NFL Network. They all need programming. They're all dying right now. He's doing that. But in the end, Dino, as I told you the last couple of weeks, there will still be an NFL negotiation for rights fees. And they are going to double, even though right now we're in a world crisis, they're still going to double the rights fees they currently have. And Goodell is basically saying, okay, I'll give you guys a favor here. I will toss you this draft, and then in a few months when we resume negotiations, you're going to pay out the ass for fees. So I think that's what's happening here. This is a one percenter commissioner prioritizing his one percenter owners and these one percenter networks. And you know, he doesn't have a medical degree. He isn't even referring to the danger at hand. If you're going to have a football season in September, you're going to put fans and players at risk in a sport where players are grappling and sweating and spitting you know, every single play, and you're actually sitting here in April thinking about a season in September when we have absolutely no idea where this pandemic is going in the world. Shame on them. I'm disgusted that they continue to be this tone deaf.
It's another Mariotti Wednesday question, comment, suggestion for Jay. Send your dispatches. It is DinoTalkUSA@gmail.com. That's DinoTalkUSA@gmail.com. You know, Jay, again, I don't want to give anyone, and I said this the other night on the show, I think it was last week or maybe the first show I did this week. Sports has been such a central component in my life and yours and so many others for so long. That I almost feel guilty saying this, but in another way, I've got to concede that it's something that rises to the surface with me as the days fall off the calendar, and because sports is such an institution in this country that can't be compared with any other country in the world. I find myself missing the sports world, the daily activity, the narrative, the storylines, all that kind of stuff. At the same time, reminding myself, being sensitive to the fact that, listen, as you just said, it's a worldwide crisis and something that, I mean, it's so many things that are unknown even still. And I detailed some of this in the first hour. Things that we don't know, information that we question whether or not we're getting all of the information and how much of the information is accurate and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't blame anyone, Jay, during these times for saying, because they've become so accustomed, because it is so within the fiber of this country and the importance of sports in this country, like me, millions and millions of other people, and I'm sure even you, miss the world of sports, and you want to see things get back to normalcy again, and not knowing when that's going to be or what normalcy is even going to look like coming out the other side of this makes it even more complicated. But I'm sure that you miss it. I'm sure that, you know, millions of other people miss it. But the one thing that I don't want is, I read something today out of, I think it was the Dallas newspaper down there, where the NBA is floating this idea of having pivoting, if they can, to quarantined arenas, to just start the season with playoffs before empty people, before empty arenas with no people in Las Vegas. I mean, either give me sports back as it was, or don't give me sports back at all. You know what I'm saying?
They're suggesting that, Dino, the NBA, because there's a 70-game regular season threshold in which the NBA will get a payment from its broadcast partners, meaning they need to get to that 70th game. That's how greedy they are right now. They should not even be thinking about that. That's the way the cookie crumbles, Adam Silver. We're in a historic period in this country where thousands of people are dying. Many thousands more will die. We have no idea what we're dealing with here. And you're worried about your 70-game regular season? Sorry, this is where they lose me. This is where I become detached. Of course I miss sports, but Dina, we have seen the Tokyo Olympics say we're backing off. Wimbledon, the Masters, we're backing off. We're not moving forward until we see what's going on. And yet we have the NFL, the NBA, and even Major League Baseball continuing to make noises about playing games as soon as the summertime.
Yeah. Yeah.
You talk about outright delusion, and I miss it, but I don't miss the people who run sports. If you've noticed in our many discussions, I have a great disdain for some of the people who run sports, and their egos run amok, their business egos, the way they prioritize their own greed over simple humanity in this case. No, I think the first question we have to be asking about any of these leagues, including the NBA going back, is, are the players going to be safe, even if there are no fans in the stands? We're actually going to put all of these teams in a bubble in Vegas, or I saw Louisville, Kentucky, really? Hawaii? I've seen some outlandish places suggested where this can be a TV tournament where, according to Adam, a man who I generally respect, but not over the last month and a half, he thinks people need sports and this will entertain them. No, make it clear, Adam, that you're trying to get to that 70-game threshold so that you can relax a little bit about the billions you're going to lose if you don't get to that 70-game threshold. No, you know, it's all about money. That's why you hear the anger in my voice. And that's why Adam Schefter said what he said, because these leagues are prioritizing their own fortunes. It comes off as the epitome of greed and arrogance at a time when they should just go away, be thankful they're alive and well and not attached to a ventilator, instead of saying, oh, we're trying to come back. We'll make... If you even asked the players how they feel about this, LeBron James went on a podcast the other day and said, F no, I am not coming back. This is a dangerous sport. People sweating all over me. Of course, it's basketball. And I don't need to remind anybody that at least 10 NBA players have tested positive, probably 5-6 times more of that. We just don't know about it. And of course, as we've been finding out the facts about this virus, you know, I'm being told 40% of the American population is right now operating without any sort of symptoms and yet passing on the virus. So if you're asymptomatic and you're feeling great, you have no idea who else you might be making sick. It's an affront to elderly people in this country, the fact that so many younger people don't care if they're passing it on. And I'm really stunned that the NBA is sitting there wondering how they can play the rest of the regular season in quarantine. It's disgusting.
All right, what do we hear all the time, and you've lived through all these, you've reported, I'm sure, on some of these activities, when you get to a situation where a new collective bargaining agreement is being negotiated by players and management, no matter what the sport is, and what do we always inevitably hear from the Players Association? We hear, right, Jay, we've got to remain adamant on several of these points, these clauses that we're looking for, because we're setting the table for the future generation of players that are going to be coming onto the scene, like the generation before us set it up for us. So we've got to be consistent. We've got to make sure that the future generations of players are going to be able to take advantage of the situation that we're going to be able to set up for them. Okay, fine, good. Well, we've heard that. It's a mantra that has been repeated over and over again. So today, I thought a very benevolent, there's no other way to look at it, I don't think, a very benevolent act by Shin-Soo Choo of the Texas Rangers, who has dipped into his own pocket and has dispersed $1,000 to each of the 191 Texas Rangers minor league players. Now, I don't need to tell you or anyone else that being a major league player and being in the middle of this worldwide catastrophe on our hands, the ability with the millions in the bank that they've got is for them to get by this whole thing, missing paychecks with the force majeure thing and all. It's easier for them to wade through this than minor league players who were paid peanuts. But I'm struck by the fact that with the emphasis on the next wave of players and the alleged concern for those next wave of players that is so often voiced in the CBA negotiations, where are the players in Major League Baseball that have gotten together that have said, hey, for that next generation of players, let's take a cue from Shin-Soo Choo, put 50 players together, put $1 million in a pot and distribute it to the minor league players across all major league franchises and all of their minor league systems. Don't you think an act like that of benevolency would certainly make the Major League Baseball community be looked upon in much more favorable terms than maybe what reality might suggest right now?
I agree, and I'll take it a step further. Why not the owners? Instead of Roger Goodell saying America needs the draft, no, Roger, what America needs is your billionaire owners to get together and maybe, I don't know, cobble up $1 billion for coronavirus relief. How about that? Yeah, benevolence, players, but mostly I'm looking at owners. They're the ones with the billions, Dino. Chu doesn't have billions, and I applaud him for what he's doing. I saw Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, L.A. Clippers, donate a healthy chunk of money to the coronavirus efforts. Where are these other owners? Where is Jerry Jones? No, Jerry Jones trying to make sure the draft is coming. I haven't heard Jerry talk about donating $1 billion here or there. That's what galls me. It's the sports themselves have this money, and they're not even talking about making major donations to this crisis that is going on. So congratulations to any player, and I have seen various players, Steph Curry, there have been a few out there who have stepped forward, and they should be applauded. But you realize, Dino, that in the middle of all of this, the Chicago Cubs made history by trading a minor league catcher, I believe, to the Boston Red Sox in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. That happened the other day, and this poor guy, who I think herds cattle in the off season, has no money. This poor guy now is wondering, how the hell do I get from Arizona to Florida, and where do I go? I can't report to camp. I'm not getting a paycheck. Well, who the hell makes a trade in the middle of the coronavirus? Will you tell me that?
Well, I think you mentioned who calls a season ticket holder and wants them to re-up for the next season in the midst of all of this.
Warrior.
I mean, come on, you're kidding
That's
me, man.
What I mean. These people have been living in this bubble for so long, a bubble of tremendous wealth and adulation, And the media, largely at fault, were the ones who lift them onto those pedestals. And yet, when we're in the middle of a human crisis, when we're all equals trying to unify and band together, we're finding out that the NFL wants to have a draft. No, you're not doing that for us. I don't want to, as you mentioned earlier, I don't want to watch a watered-down draft by Skype or Zoom. I don't want to watch that. I want to see an actual draft. I can wait till next year. Dino, I love sports as much as anybody, but I can wait. I can call off 2020 very easily. I probably speak for a lot of people. If you want to gamble on something, I guess the show I mentioned earlier, you can gamble on Joe Exotic on the show. They're actually doing bets on there, or Belarus soccer. You can do that.
Yeah.
But as far as the actual games, the finals, the regular seasons, I'm fine taking a pause in 2020. We took a pause, not for that long, but after 9/11, it was a healthy pause. We took a pause as a nation dating back to the Bay Area earthquake in 1989 for a couple of weeks before baseball resumed. This is going to end up being a multi-month pause, and I think we have to do that in deference to the people dying. And baseball and basketball and football should just go away and shut up until further notice.
Jay, in terms of your own routine during the last couple of weeks, and with streets emptying and stores shutting down, and things like that. Personally, I'm interested in how it and you live in a place where there are many more people than I do, so you're probably a little bit more reluctant to go out as often as I find myself on occasion. But how has this affected you in terms of shopping for things that you need and getting, you know, the required things that you need in your house to live and so on and so forth? How have you dealt with that personally?
Well, extreme care. And unlike New York, this is what people don't know. You lived in New York. You understand that you're basically crowding millions upon millions of people onto an island, whereas Los Angeles County, the statistics you're seeing come out of here compared to New York, and you hear Governor Cuomo say L.A. is next. Well, not really. L.A. County is massive. It's something like 450 square miles or something. I mean, it's massive, and maybe even more than that. I don't have that figure, but L.A. County could stretch from where I am talking to you 26, 27 miles from here. It depends on your own individual neighborhood when you live in Los Angeles. And where I live, right by the ocean, Santa Monica, you have to be very careful. You're trying to keep your distance. There are still people walking. You're very concerned about that errant sneeze. Is somebody going to sneeze on me from behind? I have all these people running now, these runners coming out of nowhere, and I'm frightened when they're running by me. They're sweating, and what happens? Am I going to get a droplet on me? So, yes, I live in a heavily populated area, not like New York, yet still people everywhere trying to get their exercise. The days are blue skies, great sun. This is why you moved out here. The pollution is nil because there aren't cars in the freeway. So you're seeing these gorgeous days in L.A., and yet you go to the farmer's market this morning in Santa Monica, and you're trying to keep your 6 feet. Hell, you're 12 feet, you're 18 feet. How are you going to do that when you want to reach for the asparagus, and here's some guy in here reaching as well, even though he might have gloves and I have gloves? I saw a guy last week at the farmer's market actually grab a tomato, accidentally drop it onto the ground, pick it up and put it back into the tomato pile, and I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? But nobody could find the tomato because it was a big pile. You have to be very careful about these oddball things you have never thought about in your lifetime. In the end, I think we're all going to be much cleaner. The sky is going to be cleaner. People are going to be cleaner. Hopefully people are more considerate and empathetic and honest, and we don't have as many cars on the road, and we don't have to go to offices and travel over the world for business as much. Hopefully we come out of the end of this as a cleaner, purer, more ethical nation. But right now we're in the thick of it. We're not even near an ending. We're just getting started, and I'm glad that the president finally planted that seed once and for all, so that everybody now understands this is the closest thing we've seen to an apocalypse in our lifetime.
So ESPN, just like every other sports channel network is looking for anything that they can get, you know, Jay, in terms of sports programming that is original and has never been seen before. And, of course, this is very difficult during these times. But so they've shifted. ESPN has. They've got this 10-part, I believe it's a 10-part, documentary coming up on Michael Jordan, which they've pushed up. I think it's going to be released soon. And, of course, you covered Jordan for all those years in Chicago with the Sun-Times, and I'm sure you're aware of this this upcoming documentary. What are your thoughts going in before you even see it?
Well, I was looking forward to this, and they did move it up. Good for them. There's a lot of demand for this. LeBron James came out the other day and said, "Why doesn't ESPN do this earlier?" And they arranged for it because they're losing their ass. All these sports networks are losing their ass. ESPN needs something to engage audiences, so they move it up to later this month. But I did some digging on it. The partners, the executive producers, Michael Jordan, the NBA, and a media company run by an NBA owner named Peter Guber, co-owner of the Golden State Warriors. So if you've ever watched NBA TV, Dino, you'll see their documentaries as opposed to some of the classic 30 for 30 documentaries that are more raw. The NBA TV documentaries, this is going to be an NBA TV documentary. They had a bunch of film from that season where David Stern always said, hey, if there's one great story going into a season, let's make sure we get it documented on film. Well, apparently this film was hidden in some basement for years. They finally found it, and the NBA sold it to ESPN and Netflix. And then they get Jordan to fund it and the NBA to fund it. So, Dino, as you and I have talked the last couple of shows, those Bulls teams were filled with animosity on both ends. Krause and Reinsdorf over here, and Jordan, Jackson, and Pippen over here, and they broke up prematurely. They could have won a couple of more championships. I don't believe you're going to see any of that part of it. I think it'll be a full-blown celebration of the Rock show, as well it should be. I had the great privilege to live that every night, and my jaw is still sore from what I watched Jordan do. It would drop my jaw every night. But part of that story, as we all know, this is no secret, was the toxic and unnecessary infighting that led to that breakup. And I'm not going to judge it before I see it, but my guess is this is going to be watered down storytelling. And Jerry Krause passed away several years ago, so in fairness, I think they're going to say, how can we take this man apart when he's not even with us to defend himself? So I think if all of you are looking forward to that great definitive Bulls dynasty story from all sides, all angles, you're not going to get it. You're going to get Michael Jordan in his final season, and believe me, Dino, it was rough. They almost lost the Pacers in the Eastern Finals this close to losing a Game 7. So you'll see the basketball end of it. I just don't think you're going to see the drama behind the scenes. And believe me, between those guys fighting Dennis Rodman, all of that, the drama was unforgettable, and that's the real 30 for 30 they should be doing.
Isn't Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong, Jay, doesn't Jordan have some editorial control, or isn't he a part of this himself?
Yeah, okay. He's an executive producer, right. And the NBA is.
Right.
And I guarantee you, Adam Silver is talking to Reinsdorf, and Reinsdorf is still the owner of the Bulls, telling him, Adam, I don't want any of this crap in this, especially during the coronavirus. I don't know. They were editing it furiously the last few weeks. The minute I saw Jordan's name on it, Michael is long past the grudge in Chicago, as we have talked about. Michael now owns the team in Charlotte. He needs to improve as an owner. It's not a very good franchise. And you saw him at the Kobe Bryant Memorial. What a year this has been, by the way. We go through the whole Kobe Bryant Memorial. Now this? I mean, what the hell is going on in the world? Anyway, watch it, folks. I'm not telling you not to watch it. I just think it's going to be watered down.
You think it's going to be a puff piece?
Probably more indicative of ESPN's relationships with athletes and leagues than the great journalism they have done in those 30 for 30 docs through the
years. So essentially you think it's going to be a puff piece and just a glorification of Jordan, minus any of the polarizing or controversial things that went on with the Bulls during...
Which led it to end before it should have ended. That was the story.
Right.
If we're going to do a, a docuseries on the final season. Phil Jackson called it The Last Dance.
Yeah.
I hope that they let, and Phil was interviewed for this, I hope they allow Phil to talk about his problems with Krause. You know what started this, Dino? Krause had a meeting with Jackson. They didn't get along for years. Krause calls in Jackson at the beginning of the season and says, you can go 82 and bleeping O, and you're not coming back. This is it for you and the Chicago Bulls. That's what I want to see in this documentary. I don't think we're going to be seeing that. But to me, that was the best part of the story. This never had to happen, but Krause wanted all the glory, didn't get any, was mocked by Michael. He was called crumbs by Michael. And Jackson and Pippen and some others fell into place. And then you have the owner who has to, you know, stick up for his general manager over here and doesn't build a bridge between the two warring parties. And snap, it ends after a sixth title when they could have won a couple more.
Yeah, and we mentioned this, I think, the last time we got together, Jay. I mean, it still boggles the mind, right? All these years later that we talked about the relationship between some owners and their iconic players, Brady and Robert Kraft in New England. Magic and Jerry Buss out in Los Angeles, and all these years later, particularly because of what Jordan and that team were able to accomplish and the rock star attraction that franchise was. And as you note, and I'm very aware of that Krause, you know, told Jackson before the start of the year, you guys can go 82-0, you could sweep the playoffs, and this is it. We're going to break up this team and we're going in another direction. I mean, one of the most egregious, short-sighted sorts of visions for a franchise that one can consider.
And I told you some of the problems. They refused to redo Jordan's contract. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Patrick Ewing, when the NBA was booming in the mid-90s, those owners ripped up their deals and said, we're going to reward you here. Not the Bulls. They said, no, you're going to stick it out to the end of that 8-year, $24 million. That created animosity. Every time they win a championship, Phil would go in for a negotiation thinking he would get a long-term deal as the highest-paid coach in the NBA. Nope. He would walk out, sign a one-year deal. That would be another problem. Scottie Pippen always felt he was underpaid. They didn't redo his deal. You bring in Dennis Rodman into the middle of it. I mean, this is about as combustible a mix as you could ever put into a pot. And yet, they still kept winning championships. Nothing like it ever in the history of sports. And why did it happen? Because Jordan would bail them out of every situation, not just on the court, but when Rodman would show up drunk at practice, which happened just about every day, Jordan would literally grab him and say, you know, asshole, I'm going to ruin your life. I brought you here. You know, everybody knows the story about Jordan thinking Steve Kerr was a little too feisty, little skinny white guy. Steve is a lot more built now as a coach than he was as a player. Go look at the old Steve Kerr pictures. His arms are like toothpicks. Jordan punched him out in practice one day. Steve Kerr. These were the tensions behind the scenes that made this such a compelling story. It wasn't just dunks and resilience,
yeah,
and beating the Pacers, and I think that's what you're going to get in this. You're going to get a lot of the rock star stuff on the road, the hotel scenes. We already know all that. I think what we're going to get here is what we already know, but this is as good as ESPN can do. They're just thankful they have anything at this point to put on the air.
You know,
I think you're going to see promotion out the ass in this thing. I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope it wins an Oscar.
Mm.
I just don't think that's going to happen.
It's kind of reminiscent, you know, you're talking about the combustible personalities on that team over a collective number of years, the names that you mentioned, and maybe even a few others. But they, when they hit the hardwood, you know, they came together, they coalesced and gelled, and they did the best team in basketball and won all those championships, led, of course, by Michael. In a lot of ways, Jay, it's kind of reminiscent to me of those old swinging A's that won three consecutive World Series titles from 72 through 74. And those guys would fight like cats and dogs and have brawls in the clubhouse, but when they hit the field, they would kick the shit out of the other team. And it a lot of parallels between, in some ways, those that Oakland dynasty and the Bulls dynasty. And in relation to some of those combustible personalities and some of the disagreements and some of the infighting, you were up close and personal for just about all of it. And so I want to get your thoughts on the Pippen, Jordan Pippen dynamic during those years as far as you saw it.
Well, it was difficult at the start. Scotty came out of nowhere, the middle of Arkansas. Kraus made a draft night trade for him, and nobody really knew who he was. He was one of these draft night steals. Who's Scotty Pippen? I mean, you didn't see him in March Madness, Central Arkansas. But to Kraus's credit, I mean, Jerry Kraus did have a scout's eye. He found Scotty Pippen, and then Michael Jordan cultivated Scotty Pippen. And when Michael ran off to play baseball, and there's still people who think he was suspended, and I'm certain that David Stern found gambling stuff of Michael, because there was gambling stuff of Michael, okay? But whatever that ended up being, it was Scotty Pippen's team for a while there. Scotty just about self-destructed, gun in his car outside of P.J. Clark's in Chicago, called the fans racists one night. Scotty was a train wreck without Michael, and they did not win. They came close, but you remember the night when Scotty didn't get the shot against the Knicks, and they gave Tony Kukoc a shot. He made the shot, and Scotty didn't walk out onto the floor, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Sat on a bench and sulked.
Yeah.
Pippen was a baby, and it took Michael to return after they won those three titles to really mold Scotty and allow that relationship to develop, where Scotty became a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest defensive players of all time and an offensive force in its own right, an unbelievable passer. Jordan made Scotty Pippen. Without Michael, Scotty may have been one of these journeymen who was traded five times, for all we know. With Michael, he was a Hall of Famer and fit perfectly into that role with Michael. And I'll tell you what, Dino, in certain NBA finals, the first one against Utah, Scotty was more important in that series than even Michael and how that series developed. So, yeah, Pippen to this day doesn't get enough credit. You see him on, he's a media guy. I would have thought the last guy to end up in the media would be Scotty, but he's doing okay. And it's fascinating how all of them have, Steve Kerr ends up being one of the great coaches of all time. Scotty's now an analyst. Jordan owns a team. You know, it's funny how all of that developed, and Dennis Rodman is lucky to be alive, yet he's brokering deals with the North Korean ruler. I mean, it's still an unbelievable story, and that, see, if I were doing that, if I were writing that, I would include now, you know, look how their lives developed after that period. That's almost more interesting than what was going on back then.
Speaking of coaches, you mentioned Kerr, now a coach. Your view of, obviously, an assemblage of talent that was just, you know, worked so well together for all those years, but do they win those titles, in your opinion, Jay, with Doug Collins as the coach instead of Phil Jackson? And if not, why?
Doug was too high strung. Doug was not connecting with certain players. When you have a type A to the max leader like Michael Jordan, and you've got a type A crazy man at the time in Doug Collins, that was a bad mix. Phil, and again, more credit for Kraus here, Phil was the perfect antithesis of Doug Collins. He's coming in with yoga books. He wants meditation. He's talking about Woodstock and the Grateful Dead. And they brought him in specifically to be an assistant. And then when Doug self-destructed, Phil became the obvious heir apparent to that, and it worked. And believe me, he and Michael often fought over Phil's triangle offense. Tex Winter was in his, I believe, his 60s when he joined the Bulls. He was almost in his 80s when they won their last championship, and yet that worked. Tex Winter was the author of the triangle, and Phil told Michael, you're going to run it whether you like it or not. Jokes were made of it every year. Yet the triangle offense did work because Michael Jordan made it work, and the others fell into place. So, to answer your question, no. They never would have. They would have killed each other, I think. And Phil knew when to turn it on and off. Phil knew when to be an asshole, and he knew when to soft pedal it with all of them. He also was great with Scottie Pippen, but when Scottie did not go out on the court that night and decided to sulk because he wasn't given the last shot, Phil reamed him in the press conference after, called it the most embarrassing thing he's ever seen.
Yeah.
So Pippen had to grow out of that for the second part of the three-peat. So, oh, we could talk all night about the Bulls, Dino, and I'm glad that this series has been moved up, because we can talk about it then after we see a segment. We can talk about the following
sure.
show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now you know, sticking with Jackson for a second, Jay, and, you know, oftentimes people will quibble over just how good or how great a coach Phil Jackson was. Certainly in the stops that he made as an NBA coach, he had some of the greatest players that were on his roster, and so you know, this leads people to conclude that, well, you know, he had these great players, and so, you know, if he had been coaching the Detroit Pistons, or he'd been coaching the New Orleans Pelicans, or, you know, teams like that, you know, Phil Jackson wouldn't be as revered, not nearly as revered as he is now. But I think the thing that people miss about the point of Jackson, or any really successful NBA coach, is that it may not be so much about X's and O's and actually in-game coaching as much as it is about managing personalities, soothing personalities, and getting players to buy in to a vision. And I think this is where Phil, at both his stops in Chicago and in Los Angeles, excelled very well. And so I'm reluctant to agree with people who say, well, you can't really tell me that Phil Jackson was a great coach because he had some of the greatest players in the game.
Well, there was failure in Chicago before Phil. Remember, even with Phil, they couldn't get by the Pistons for a while. That took many a battle against the Bad Boys. I'm always going to say that Phil belongs in the pantheon of greatest coaches in sports history, because I think at times it's even harder to manage the super egos. And on that team, you had three Hall of Fame basketball players. You have another guy, Kerr, ended up, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Fame coach. Look at some of the personalities on that team, the divergent personalities, and how he had to make that work, and how he had to manage Michael, not only through those seasons of wear and tear, but through the various controversies that Michael Jordan had to deal with, including gambling and the murder of his father. I mean, Phil Jackson, this is not somebody taking over the Atlanta Hawks and winning 52 games. This is on a completely other level than that. And Phil is spectacular. I hated to see it go the way it did, the ending in New York. He was never meant to be a management guy. He is strictly a human being person, and he was perfect in a setting with a human challenge, a sociological challenge, and I would call the Lakers that with Kobe and Shaq, and I certainly would call the Jordan dynasty a sociological challenge. But Phil Jackson could have wandered into a mediocre team in Phoenix and never won anything, so different circumstances demand a different style of leadership.
Yeah, no question. 14 to the hour. It's Mariotti, Jay Mariotti with me this hour till the top of the hour. You got a question, comment, suggestion for Jay, it is dinotalkusa@gmail.com, dinotalkusa@gmail.com. Well, now, sticking with this upcoming documentary, I'm really interested in, you know, one of the things that they definitely can't avoid, and that was when Jordan left, retired, went and played baseball, and you know, the whole thing with the Sports Illustrated cover at the time, Baggett Michael, and his reluctance to speak to Sports Illustrated ever since then. But people have often said over the years, Jay, the real story of why Michael Jordan retired and why he went and played baseball before eventually coming back to the Bulls. Is there a real story out there that you know that hasn't been reported yet as far as that whole situation is concerned?
David Stern had the goods on Michael Jordan. It's public. I mean, you remember the book, Richard Esquinas, Michael and Me. He took this scumbag in San Diego, took Michael's money in a golf course. Jordan was a terrible golfer, yet, as his father once told me before he was murdered, Michael has a competition problem. No, he had a gambling problem, period, end of story. And I remember the day I wrote a column in Chicago saying Michael Jordan is exposing himself to extortion because the people he is hanging around. There was a dead bail bondsman in North Carolina. Jordan hung out with some serious sleazebags when it came to gambling.
Yeah.
He was another creature when it came to gambling. Of course, Stern investigated it, but David Stern never suspended him. Did he have enough to, quote-unquote, suspend Jordan? Whew. I don't know. I mean, did Michael Jordan ever sit on the 18th hole, you know, lost his pants, and have somebody say to him, Mike, if you throw the over-under in tomorrow night's game, we'll call this clear. I don't know that. I have no idea. Would Jordan ever do that? The Jordan I know would never do that. Did I oftentimes see the Bulls blow big leads in the fourth quarter, oddly enough? Yep. With Jordan on the court? Yep. But I'm not going to sit here and say, aha, that's it. No, I have no evidence that Michael Jordan was Pete Rose, okay? So let's not go there.
Okay, but...
But do I have evidence that Michael Jordan was a problem gambler? Yep, it's out there.
Okay.
It's not just me, it's out there. And since then, after his retirement, the stories about Barkley and Tiger and Vegas and the money Jordan would spend, but he has the money. He's gone on to become the sneaker king. Michael Jordan could gamble his ass off from now to kingdom come and still have a fortune in the bank. So that's not the issue. It's not an issue like Barkley of starting to go broke. But yes, if you're the commissioner of a league that has built its boom on Michael Jeffrey Jordan, you might be looking a little bit the other way when it comes to his gambling problem. When, if it had been another player, you might have issued a suspension. But no, Dino, there was no quote-unquote suspension. His father died. He was coming back to play for the Bulls that year. His father was murdered. That after everything else he had gone through, just the wear and tear and the fatigue of these three championships and the media pressure and the Olympics and just being the most prominent celebrity in the world, and that would include Michael Jackson and Oprah at the time. He had had it. Then his dad's murdered just before the season, and he decided, I need to do something else. That is the true story. But you're asking me, did Michael commit suspension-worthy crimes in regard to gambling? I believe so, but the commissioner never suspended him.
Right. So in other words, it was never inferred. The Stern, in your opinion, never went to Michael Jordan and said, "Hey, take some time off. You know, retire and come back. Go do something else for a while, and then come back."
I don't think he would have told his calling card to retire when that league was continuing to soar as it never had before. Stern did not want to like send him away. The other thing would be, if David Stern truly did suspend him, why would they have allowed him to come back for a postseason? Remember, the second year, he came back for the postseason. What kind of a suspension allows somebody to come back? So, I don't know. We will never know. David Stern is a cagey guy. I had a chance to interview him before he passed for another project I'm doing. Was even cagey last summer as ever. Anytime a writer gets too close to something uncomfortable, Stern will insult you. You know, he won't mean it, but he'll say, you know, what the hell is your problem? And that was how Stern controlled the media. He is the one guy, Dino, who could keep a monumental secret. I'll tell you that. And if he did tell Michael, you're not coming back, take a break, it's never come out. Everybody has denied it 1,000 times over, including Reinsdorf, Stern, Michael. No, honestly, I was right in the middle of that. I think his father's murder, like anybody else, pushed him over the edge and he went to play baseball, of all things. No, I don't think anybody suggested that as the new Michael Jordan plot. No.
All right, back to some coronavirus news, Jay. I don't know if you've seen this, but Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said earlier today that he thinks that the Wuhan virus was likely in circulation during the past Super Bowl in Miami on February the 2nd, and says that, you know, with the roughly 62,000 fans that were in attendance at the Super Bowl and likely many more visited the area to take part in the festivities around the Super Bowl, that he thinks this is where this thing might have been spawned. I mean, that's a shot in the dark. He's throwing a dart up against the wall, you know, in the dark, and I don't know how serious I take that, but I'd be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on that, I guess.
Well, he better be careful. This is a guy who was not reacting with social distancing until Trump made him a couple of days ago. So I'm not really high on the governor of Florida. But this is what I'm talking about. Do you know the invisible enemy? I mean, millions of infected people, mostly young people, walking around without symptoms. They're transmitting the virus. Could entail 40% of the general population. Who knows how many people in that stadium, may have been exposed to it, players on the field. That's why it's so absurd for the NFL to think it could just snap, come back in September. We have no idea. This is such a mystery. It's such a mind fuck right now that we're dealing with here. It's like, what the hell is going on? It's the Twilight Zone. We have never dealt with this. We have dealt with crises before, recessions and depressions in this country, and 9/11 and world wars. This is unprecedented, and nobody has an answer for it. And the reactions are all over the map. And the governor of Florida thinks thousands of people at the Super Bowl may have had it. Well, and how about not being reckless, and why not keep that behind the scenes? Well, yeah. What are you going to do now? Anybody who went to the Super Bowl now is freaked that they have it. Okay,
that's a good point. Yeah.
Give me a test if I went to the Super Bowl. Well, you can't easily get a test, so that person's going to go through sleepless nights because Ron DeSantis has this pie-in-the-sky theory about the Super Bowl. Some of these politicians, Dino, it's just like everybody else in life. During a crisis, you find out who the competent people are, the cool people are, the smart people are, and then you find out who the reckless and the greedy and the idiotic are. I don't know why he would say that right now.
No telling when this is going to end, how it's going to end, what a societal reset might look like on the other side when we finally do wade our way through this and this virus becomes dormant. Another thing to consider, and I think we've talked about this previously, Jay, is that, and I mentioned this the other night on the show, the sports leagues cannot go back until this thing is, there's some distance between the last reported coronavirus case and, you know, no more, because as soon as sports starts up again, you know, in the unfortunate likelihood that somebody is diagnosed, a player, a coach, staff member, whatever, someone in the arena, well, then the mechanism is going to shut down all over again. So there's got to be some distance between the end of the virus or the reported end of the virus and the restarting of sports, no matter what league we're talking about. But, you know,
and we're awaiting a vaccine, and that could be a year and a half away.
Sure.
I'm hearing Fauci and the experts say, even if we have a leveling off in the summer, we could have a new strain develop in the fall. So in the middle of that, the NFL is still planning a season,
right,
and baseball's hoping to get a 100-game season in, and the NBA wants to do a quarantine playoffs, and we're going to have another strain. Is anybody considering the safety of people as everybody's trying to do their money grabs? That's what's bothering me right now about sports. Sports should not be giving us the impression that they're grabbing money right now.
But they are.
Dino, they're seeing their cash cows die.
Yep.
They're crashing.
Yeah.
They have no control. 9/11, sports soothed us. Think about it. I mean, I remember that. I remember going shortly after that, after a pause on an empty plane to St. Louis for a Cubs-Cardinals series that was going to regenerate the baseball season. But at the time, baseball acted as a diversion, escapism for us, and sports worked as escapism at the time. Sports is an annoyance right now, and I know people miss it, and I know that they miss their teams and betting on games and so on. Be happy you're alive. Realize we're going through the unprecedented, and pay more attention to, just, I'm not trying not to preach, but be more cognizant of social distancing and making sure your family and your loved ones are all healthy and obeying these rules. Don't worry about the damn NBA playoffs. Who the hell cares? And if you miss it that much to where it's destroying your life, you got a problem out there, pal. You need to readjust your life and realize this is reality. People are dying. Feel very fortunate you're healthy and your loved ones are healthy. That's where I'm coming from. And as far as I'm concerned, sports can be pushed off to the side and compartmentalized for quite a long time.
Great, Jay Mariotti, with another hour with me on this Wednesday. And Jay, stay safe out there and keep up with the news, the information. And we do it again next Wednesday, as always.
I enjoy it, Dino, very much. Thank you.
Same here. Thank you so much. That's Jay Mariotti on the Dino Costa Show.